Welcome to Hype episode 155. My name is Selena. I'm here with Pam.
Hello.
Hi, Pam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. 55, we're going along.
Feeling fine.
Feeling 55, yeah. We are back to talk about this week's pop culture news stories. We're from hypable.com, hypable.com. And this week we'll be talking Star Wars. We'll be talking some Wonder Woman. We'll be talking some Barbie, because that's what we do here. And I will be talking about The 100, of course, because that's what I'm here for. And we're coming to you after last week, obviously, where Merima said that she's not going to be doing the show anymore, which is really upsetting. And we know that you guys are sort of feeling maybe really upset about that. But me and Pam are hopefully, I'm looking forward. I hope Pam is also looking forward to continuing the show and moving it forward and taking it to interesting places. I think it's safe to say that the hosts may change, but hype is forever, as we've proven over our 155 long show life. And hopefully me and Pam will continue to be the constants.
Yeah, I think we're not going anywhere, but hopefully you guys aren't going anywhere, is I think
right.
what Selena was trying
yeah.
to say.
Yeah.
But thank you in advance for bearing with us as we go through tiny bits of growing pains. Hopefully you guys don't really notice. A lot of stuff is obviously going to happen behind the scenes, but we're still here and we will still be putting out episodes and specials. I've got a special coming out hopefully this week for you guys that I'm really excited about. So carrying on.
Absolutely. And actually, we do have something kind of fun to announce this week. And it's something that we've been talking about doing for a long time. And we were talking on Facebook and we were like, you know what, we should just decide to do it now, because what better time than right now. So we have been looking for another TV show to go back and revisit with fresh eyes. We did Gilmore Girls and we did The 100, and we've done a bunch of other shows in the past. And this time we're going to be doing... you guys guessed it. It's Merlin.
How could we not? It's like, it's,
how could we it's not? Anything like, else would be like a letdown.
It's our little like constant go-to happy place.
And, I know.
You know. It's
exactly.
I guess Merima just jumps ship, and we're like reverting back to.
Welcome to Talks of Camelot, guys.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I'm excited.
It's going to be so much fun. So yeah, I mean, if you guys are newer to Hype, you might not know that me and Pam actually used to be on a podcast together called Talks of Camelot, where we talked about Merlin back when it was still airing in like 2011 or something mm-hmm. like that. So a long time ago, but it's been 5 years since the series was over and since we watched it together on Skype.
That's right.
And now that we're going to be doing back, I'm not going to say anything about how we watch it or what our reactions
That's
were,
right.
but I guess you'll have to listen to stay tuned. So... So yeah, we're still trying to figure out like the logistics, like how are we going to make sure that we get something out to all the listeners, so not just the Patreon subscribers, but how are we going to make sure that the Patreon subscribers get something extra, and how much, like, you guys that are Patreon supporters also have to let us know, like, how interested are you actually in this, because then we'll figure out how much of that kind of content that we want to give you and how much we want to give you something else on Patreon. And everyone who's listening normally will obviously as well get to experience this journey with us, because we're going to be really excited to take it, whether you've seen Merlin before or whether you've been patiently waiting, as I know someone is, although I think she gave up because we took too long. But I don't know how
right
far you
time,
got.
But like,
yeah.
It's never the right time.
No, it's never the right
it's
time.
It's never and always the right time at the same
always
time.
The right time. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the better yeah. way to put it.
But also, like, let us know what you guys want to hear, like what you might want to see from this, because obviously Selena and I have talked in great length about Merlin before. We did a Merlin retrospect special. We did a whole show dedicated to the series back when it was still airing. We're gonna switch it up a little bit in terms of how we do our rewatch this time, but we still want to make sure that we can keep it spoiler-free for anybody that is watching for the first time. So email in, tweet us, weigh in on your thoughts. Let us know you would be watching for the first time, or if you're watching, like, you know, for a second or third, and we'll kind of figure out how to do it from there.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that kind of transitions nicely into how are you going to email us and contact us and otherwise get involved. So if you do want to, like, let us know your thoughts on the Merlin stuff or anything we talked about this week or anything you want us to talk about in the future, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. That is hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can also find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can go to Hypeable, which is hypable.com, and leave us a comment on the podcast post. So that's 155 hype. And of course, our Patreon. If you are interested in becoming a patron, or if you are a patron and you forgot the address for the patron, then it is patreon.com/hypepodcast. So you can go there and you can see the different tiers and you can access all the bonus content. This week's bonus discussion for patron subscribers is going to be on Game of Thrones, which had its first three episodes of season 7 out, and me and Pam are watching and we have a lot to say because a lot is happening in these crazy, wild, fast-paced episodes, and so we want to give that some more time to discuss, so we're going to save that for the bonus discussion. So yeah, hope that you check that out, or you can just listen to the normal show, and that is totally fine as well, because we have a lot to get into, and we're going to start with how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And Pam, why don't you go first?
Okay, so I watched the Netflix original movie To the Bone, which stars Lily Collins. It's about a girl named Ellen who is suffering from very severe anorexia, and it's like the last stitch effort she has, basically, is this rehabilitation program. She's already been through 6 of them, and this is kind of like the last shot, and it kind of details what she goes through and the personal journey there. This film was very hard for me to watch because I suffered from an eating disorder. I suffered from anorexia when I was younger. I was anorexic from maybe from 14 to 16-ish. And it's something that, like, I think, like, if you're somebody that, even if your case is not as extreme as what you see in the movie, the effects are long lasting, and it's something that I think sticks with you for a really long time. I don't have an eating disorder anymore, but I think that darkness is kind of still, like, in the back of my brain. So anything from dieting to counting calories to exercising and stuff like that, it's just kind of, it would be really easy to regress. So it's just, yeah, I think, like, the remnants are, you kind of just always have to live with them if you're a survivor. At least I have found in my own experience. So this movie was really, I struggled over whether I wanted to watch it because the trailer kind of just made it seem like any other time you see eating disorders brought up in pop culture, usually they're, like, the butt of a dark joke, and that's fine, but, like, they always kind of make me feel very uncomfortable as somebody that's gone through a similar situation. But I was really pleasantly surprised as you can be by a movie like this, just because I really enjoyed that it didn't really glorify anything from, like, how skinny she was to, like, you know, like, the benefits of not eating. Like, there are no benefits. It's just really, it's awful. And I really appreciated that a story like this didn't go out of its way to make it glamorous, even though you have somebody like Lily Collins, who is very elegant and glamorous just as a person. So I really liked that they took the care to do that. And I think that I'm sure that there are people that have also suffered from eating disorders that are going to watch this and say, oh, like, this is not, like, 100% accurate because it wasn't the way it happened to me. And I don't think a story like this needs to be 100% accurate to your own journey, because everybody's experiences are different. It was a little strange to see, like, some of my own, like, past bad habits portrayed on screen, but it was also kind of strangely cathartic. And I recommend watching with an open mind, and just kind of, like, knowing what you're getting into. If you're, like, super susceptible still to things like this, like, might not be a good movie for you for, like, your mental sanity. But yeah, if you can't relate personally, it's still worth watching and making up your own mind about it. It's not going to be for everybody, but I did think that they did a really great job with it. So I was really pleased with the outcome for what it was.
Yeah, I think I brought it up a few weeks back when I was on the show with Merima, and she hadn't watched it, but I think I sort of said a similar kind of speech on it because I think that the movie, you know, it's obviously it's made by Marty Noxon and Lily Collins have both suffered from eating disorders themselves. You know, whatever is going to be on screen in this movie is going to depict a personal experience. And I think you're right. I think there's a lot of things that you can sort of, you can acknowledge and recognize, but it's also going to be a unique experience dramatized, you know, so it's not actually someone's one-to-one experience, and it's never going to be everyone's one-to-one experience. And it's just, it's really struck me with the backlash to this one, as well as to some of the other quote-unquote controversial dramas or something that's come out recently that tackle like real issues that people are, it's like there's this weird thing in entertainment at the moment that I don't know if you've noticed, where instead of art and entertainment being considered like conversation starters or like things that are designed to make you think, there's this weird expectation that they have to present the world on a one-to-one, like they have to photograph the world, or they have to portray a 100% universal experience. And if it doesn't reflect, because I was reading a lot of reviews of it that were really negative, because they were like, this is terrible because it doesn't reflect my personal experience of this. And I'm like, no, but it never promised to. And the fact that it exists allows you to write this article expressing your personal experience with it, like if that's what you want to do. And not everyone wants to do that. Some people just want to see, oh wow, this person is struggling with something similar to what I struggled with, and it makes me, or someone is watching it going, oh wow, this person is struggling to something similar to what my friend Jane or my sister blah blah blah, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it's sometimes it's not, I feel like To the Bone is sort of at the center of this really weird cultural shift in what we expect our media to be. And first of all, I think that's really weird to contend with, but I also just think, as you say, like back to the actual movie, like it was a very very hard-hitting personal look into what this experience could be like. And it's not, I don't think it's responsible for every single person who've ever suffered from an eating disorder. But even to the extent that it does come to represent people, I thought it did a really good, honest job.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like I can't even speak for everybody that suffered from eating disorder, because I only know like my own experience, you know. So it is kind of interesting. You're right that it's like that people get so up in arms when something doesn't like you depict their unique experience. But I will say that like you're totally right. At the end of the day, things like To the Bone, they're conversation starters, and they also like, they kind of teach you what to look out for, which is good, because the, you know, when I look back at like that really dark time in my teenage years, the thing that kind of like still brings a lot of pain is the fact that like I was so good at hiding not eating or getting around not eating, and like that, like nobody noticed, you know. I was just suffering on my own in silence. And so many girls and boys do. So if anything, you know, let this film, something that accurately depicts situations like that, like be kind of, you know, a blueprint to show you what to look out for with your own friends and families, and you know, remind you that it's okay to like check up on people, because you never know when something can be extreme. Like I was never, luckily, I never got to the point where I needed to be hospitalized or put like into a rehabilitation program or anything like that, like Ellen did. But there are so many kids that like that, or and even like adults that get to the point where like that they have to, because it's gone too far, you know. But yeah, there are so many people that like suffer in silence, and like no one ever notices that they're killing themselves, and it's just, it's awful. And it all comes down to this, the unrealistic idea that you need to look perfect, or you need to look like this carbon copy that, you know, like the media or like other people sell to you as like the perfect package. And it's just awful. But it's great that movies like To the Bone exist, because we can talk about those things, and we can educate ourselves, not necessarily just on like you know, the fact that it's wrong, but, like, what can happen if you let things get too far.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention briefly before we move into news that obviously this last week was Harry Potter's birthday and J.K. Rowling's birthday and Jessica Williams' birthday, as we've, you know, been keeping you guys updated on Hypebeable. And I just wanted to sort of mark its the fact that it has passed. Did you do anything for Harry's birthday?
Well, it's so funny because this year is like the year my birthday has never ended, and I'm still celebrating.
Yeah, how was your birthday?
My birthday was good. It was the first day it was preview night at Comic-Con, so I had to go onto the floor. I did some Instagram storying on my birthday. You're welcome. Presents for you on the day I was born. But yeah, it was really nice. But like, because I wasn't at home, like my family is still celebrating my birthday. So we had cake on Harry's birthday, but it was for my birthday and like my three brothers' birthdays, because that's how far behind my family is on celebrating. We just have all been so busy that it was like July 31st. That's the day.
Aww. So.
Yeah, but it was good.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. It's actually my brother's birthday today, and he's in Norway.
That's fun.
Playing football. So, yeah, anyway. Well, now that we've rounded all the birthdays.
How do you say happy birthday in Danish?
Tillykke med fødselsdagen.
One more time.
Tillykke med fødselsdagen.
Tillykke med fødselsdagen.
Yeah, that was so good.
Yay!
I'll make sure he hears that.
Perfect.
Okay.
With the question mark at the back. Happy birthday!
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, we should move on to the news because we do have a lot to talk about. So no more. Happy birthday to any of our listeners, by the way. Feel free to write in if you too want a shout out. So our first story of the week is actually Harry Potter related ish in a weird way. This is a fun story that I saw this morning, and I was like, "There's no way that we are not talking about this on the show." So it just broke that I think Tuesday night that Star Wars 9 has hired one of those script puncher uppers. That it should be noted that Star Wars, or big movies in general, always hire. This is not news, but the one they've chosen to hire to write it is Cursed Child pen man Jack Thorne, of course, from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child fame. If that's what you want to call it. I'm being mean. I'm so sorry, Jack Thorne. I love you if you're listening. Happy birthday. But yeah, Jack Thorne is going to be going in to sort of quote-unquote fix the script of Star Wars 9, which is not the one coming out in a few months, luckily, because that would be scary. But it is the final one in the third trilogy. He'll be working with a script that was originally by Colin Trevorrow of Jurassic World, which is also funny. And it should also be noted that Colin Trevorrow is also, Jack Thorne is also working on an adaptation of his Dark Materials for the BBC that I think actually, every time I remind myself that he's doing that, even though I have not seen it and I have no reason to know, like to assume it's good, I feel a little better because I love his Dark Materials and this guy obviously like if he's taking that on, obviously it proves that he must have a great love for these things, and he must have people must like the stuff that he does with adaptations. And I really want to get your thoughts on it, but I do think that like it's worth noting for me, like after the sort of shock wore off and I was thinking, okay, so Rey's gonna go back in time and, you know, she's gonna resurrect Jabba the Hutt and they're gonna go on a little side adventure and it's gonna be really dumb. Then I was thinking, like, beyond the ridiculous plot reveals that Cursed Child really does have, like beyond the actual story, which is ridiculous, I actually did really enjoy the dialogue of the play, and I actually did really enjoy some of the characterization. I think that his work with Albus and Scorpius was really good. Like the voices that he captured for them were really good, and the voices that he captured for Hermione and Harry, not so much Ron, but for Hermione and Harry, those were really spot on. So it's interesting. It's an interesting sort of gamble, I think. What do you think? How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you're right. Plus side, he brought us Scorpius Malfoy, who is, like, the cinnamon roll of all cinnamon rolls and deserves everything and all the praise. But I guess you're right. Like, the dialogue was fine. I just, like, I think I had more of a problem with the characterization. I don't know how you separate those. But, like, there were just some things, like, specifically in Cursed Child with regards to Harry's character that I could not forgive. Like, I didn't appreciate the evolution of his character very much from, like, what we saw to what we got. But you're right. I mean, there must be something to be said for the fact that he's getting tapped to, for lack of a better word, tap into these franchises that have been around forever and ever and ever. And I guess the hope is that we don't get another Cursed Child with Star Wars. But he clearly has a knack for writing in the voice of these characters. You know, these characters that have existed before that are not original to him. So he's like the ultimate fanfic writer. It's great. It's fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what he is. And that's interesting because I know I was going on a Hypebeast Twitter and I saw we had like a little bit of backlash because of the article that Andrew wrote. Like, it's no secret that me and Andrew saw the play together in London with some other Hypebeast people last summer. And we've talked extensively about how we both thought it was bullshit. Like, it is bullshit. Like, I think it's okay to say, like, this is a fanfic version of the story we know, but it's a very good fanfic and the premise is ridiculous. Like, I will never find a way to think it's okay that they made time travel such a huge part of the story when that has very specifically not been a huge part of the plot of Harry Potter. And they actually, like, they went back to that Triwizard Tournament, you guys, and Cedric Diggory. I mean, let's be real, that is a ridiculous thing. And they gave Voldemort a child, like, those two things. And they sidelined Rose Weasley. So those three things are going to bother me forever, and they are not good things. But it doesn't mean that the writing itself, and he's not making up the story, is what it is here, right? He's not, I doubt that he will find a way
he's
to work
doing
in
just like he's pick,
a secret.
He's doing pickups, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so he's not, I doubt he can find a way to work in something wild and crazy, you know, that like, oh, that would be fun if this ridiculous thing happened and they went back to Tatooine and retraced Anakin's steps through the sand, you know, like, that's not going to happen. It's going to be what he's going to be doing is the kind of stuff that I believe, based on my knowledge of his one work, that he's really good at, which is dialogue, and which is finding characters' voices, and which is maybe throwing in some sweet little character moments between, you know, that establish relationships and stuff. And he is very good at that. So, yeah, I'm torn. My initial gut reaction is to be super worried, but I actually, you know, there's a lot of different voices involved with making a story like this, and they already know the basic plot of the thing, and he's not going to necessarily come in and change that. So yeah, let's call it cautious optimism, and let's also say that all of this said, his Dark Materials, I'm still really excited for that, and I love his Dark Materials, so this hasn't made me less excited for Star Wars or anything like that. Okay, so another tiny bit of Star Wars news. Ron Howard, obviously, the Star Wars, I mean, I don't have complete faith in Star Wars necessarily because they recently fired their director of Han Solo, the Han Solo spinoff, to bring in Ron Howard at kind of like the 11th hour to take over directing duties. But he has actually, speaking to The Hollywood Reporter, Howard actually said that it was going really great on set. He replaced Phil Lord and Chris Miller like a couple of weeks before they were set to wrap up, so he hasn't been on set for very long. But, you know, he has nothing but good things to say. He's like, it's a fantastic script. It's a great cast. I'm having a fantastic creative experience with it. I mean, obviously, what else is he going to say on one hand? He's not necessarily going to be bashing it or talking the movie down. But he seems enthusiastic. He says, like, I think we'll be able to do something that is a lot of fun. I think we can assume that this movie is going to be fun above all else. It's going to be basically like a buddy cop comedy in the Star Wars universe. It's going to be very different tonally from the regular saga. So what do you think about his comments? Do you think he's just... being a yes man, or
that he needs to smooth over the drama. So you're right. Like, true. What else can he say? But at the end of the day, you know, Ron Howard is not a bad director. It's just, and I think that if he had been the original director, nobody would have batted an eyelash. It's just the fact that this movie's coming out so soon, and he's coming in to switch it up because it was so bad that has people a little bit worried. But, yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, he's a professional. He's got a lot of big titles under his belt. If the movie's bad, it won't be his fault, you know? So...
true, he's doing the best.
And he does look really enthused. Like, I mean, like, I feel like every day I'm on Twitter, he's got a new update on there. So he's clearly having a lot of fun on set. Whether that's somebody else asking him to, you know, be like, let them know we're having fun or not. That's like, you know, that might be something we never know until much later. But yeah. All right, so here is something that we can all get excited about. Our favorite movie ever, Wonder Woman, is getting a sequel officially. This is something that was confirmed at San Diego Comic-Con. And when the Justice League had their panel presentation, they mentioned that the movie was going to be out sometime in 2019. And now we know for certain that we can expect Wonder Woman 2 to hit U.S. cinemas on December 13th. 2019. So that's the official date marked in your calendars. Gal Gadot will be back as Diana, and we'll all just have a nice cry in the theater because we'll be so in awe of her awesomeness. And yeah, little short but sweet story.
I know, it's exciting. Yeah, I'm excited.
I know. I really need to get out and see this movie again. I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
And I want to enjoy it another time.
Me too. But I'm falling behind on movies now because now I have to watch Dunkirk. And there was one other one that I wanted to watch, and then this one again. And I just
I'm curious about how you're going to feel about Dunkirk.
Did you like it?
I there were some parts I liked and some parts I didn't like. I was a little confused by how Nolan chose to execute the story, but I think I might enjoy it more the second time around.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. I totally derailed the conversation.
Yeah, that's okay.
But yay, Wonder Woman. We're excited. Okay, so moving on. The J.R.R. Tolkien biopic that was announced a while ago has found its Tolkien. He'll be played by Nicholas Holt, best known by me for The Warm Bodies. I don't know where you know him from,
Skins.
But I thought he was hilarious in that one. Oh, yeah, I guess it's Skins, too.
And about a boy.
Warm Bodies was so
never
good,
forget.
Though. Yeah. Okay. It's this basically just about the life and times of J.R.R. Tolkien, who, of course, penned The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and everything in Middle Earth and basically launched the fantasy, high fantasy genre as we know it. He's actually just the front runner, but we're expecting that he's going to be announced to play him. And the movie will explore the formative years of the orphaned author as he finds friendship, love, and artistic inspiration among a fellow group of outcasts at school. And he, you know, Tolkien served in World War I, which obviously that made the way that him and his friends were serving and they were like a fellowship, and that obviously made its way into his novels, and he would go on to write his stories for when his son was serving in I believe that must have been the Second World War, obviously, and he found love. I believe I was reading his story at one point, like he found love with an older woman, and it was very scandalous, and there's all kinds of good things, and I think Nicholas Holt, he's good. I like Nicholas Holt. Like, why not? And they have similar eyebrows.
That's all that matters.
Oh, excellent eyebrow casting.
I thought this was really interesting because I haven't seen this movie, but he recently played J.D. Salinger in another biopic called Rebel in the Rise.
That's funny.
Maybe he's like the go-to be this author in the movie of his life.
He has author eyes and eyebrows.
You have your author's eyes.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, here's some more movie news for you guys. Earlier, just kind of at the end of last year, we caught wind that Sony Pictures was working on a live-action Barbie movie. And the saving grace of this movie, honestly, was that Amy Schumer was going to play Barbie. And she was also set to write part of the script. I don't know if she was going to co-write it or write the whole thing. And the movie is going to be about what happens to Barbie after she gets, like, chucked out of Barbie Land for not being perfect enough and has to go live in the real world. And, you know, Amy Schumer is kind of like this unconventional Hollywood A-lister. So I think we all kind of bought the idea that she would just be perfect for this. But unfortunately, she had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts, and Sony is allegedly currently circling around Anne Hathaway to portray Barbie instead. It should be noted also that Schumer took to Instagram and said, like, yeah, this is great. If she, like, you know, I'm down for this. But nothing is set in stone yet. But it is kind of interesting to go from, like, Amy Schumer to Anne Hathaway, who, of course, has done rom-coms before, but they couldn't be any more different. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with this movie, if they keep with the general idea they were going to go with, or kind of tailor it more to Anne Hathaway's strengths. But yeah, I mean, I love Anne Hathaway.
Oh my God.
But it would have been fun to see Amy Schumer do this movie. I think it would have been fun.
Yeah, this is the most bizarre change of, like, this is, you know, let's get the Cursed Child writer to go and rewrite this Star Wars thing. Like, this is a really weird turn, because I think, like, you're so right when you said that the idea of a live-action Barbie movie is a really dumb idea. Like, it's a really, I mean, we just had the Emoji Movie out, and it was, you know, it was poop, as they say in emoji language. You know, it did terribly. And I think that this one, the only thing that was like, okay, well, maybe they've got an interesting take on it, is that Amy Schumer, who has built herself up to be this brand that is as far from a Barbie as you can be, you know, the way that she's behaving and stuff like that. But she has that, she does have that very blonde, sort of very, you know, cheery, look to her that sort of subverts the Barbie trope in a really interesting way. And I don't like to say bad things about Anne Hathaway, because she takes so much heat for things that is not her fault. And if you ever want to see the best thing that you will ever see in your life, go watch her rap battle on James Corden, because she slayed and she was very, very, very funny and very good. And Anne Hathaway is very funny and very good. But she's also Anne Hathaway. And Anne Hathaway as Barbie is something that you could expect to take totally 100% seriously, because she could be a Barbie. Like, she could be.
Yeah, she's perfect. And that's not her fault. But it's just, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, why would anybody chuck Anne Hathaway out of perfect land?
Yeah. You know? And, like, of course you can tell the same story. And it's not like, you know, it's not that she can't act like Amy Schumer would have acted, because she's an actress. But anyone could do that. And they would be like, okay, then. Like, whatever. Like, you could get Rachel McAdams in there. Or you could get, like, what's her face? The girl from Enchanted, Amy. She's done other things besides Enchanted. Amy Adams. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. they could get any actress in there. And they could be like, you can't be in Barbie Land. And we'll see her, like, be clumsy and fall over and, like, be funny-ish. But I think that Amy Schumer is such a specific performer that everything she does, everything she's been, all her image has led her up to us hearing the announcement of her as Barbie and being like, ah, that's so funny and ironic. And Hathaway is just like, yeah, okay, you know, like, so what? So I'm just that the it's not Anne Hathaway that I have a problem with. It's that it's not Amy Schumer, because I think she's one of, like, maybe five actresses that I actually would make me interested to see a Barbie movie. And Anne Hathaway's not one of them. So, sorry. Sorry, Hathaway. Maybe there'll be a trailer out and I'll be proven totally wrong. It'll be my favorite movie of all time, we'll see. So, last week, I know that Merrima and Pam spent a lot of time talking about San Diego Comic-Con, and Pam, I'm sure, shared I haven't heard your amazing stories. I'm sure you have a lot to share. But what I wanted to spend a little time on this week, as has been requested, thank you very much, dear listeners, that we spend a little time talking about the 100 related scoops that came out of San Diego Comic-Con, because there were a lot. And it's funny, Pam, you messaged me, like, we were going back and forth coordinating, because you were obviously doing the press stuff at Comic-Con, and you did such a great job, and you were like, yeah, not really any big reveals. And I was like, I'm sure I can find something. And I could.
Well, I'm only at one table, to be fair.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
But the panel was just like, it was great, but it was also like, give me the scoops, guys. But they gave us all the scoops.
There were scoops. Octavia's hairdo. It's very exciting. Yes, anyway, I wanted, before I get into like all that kind of stuff, I wanted to hear if you had a great time. Like, what were some of the things that you thought were the biggest reveals out of it? Did you have an interesting time in the press room?
Yeah, the press room was really, it was really crazy. I mean, as you know, the 100 is comprised of like, it's a huge ensemble cast, and they brought a lot of people. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. with the Comic-Con press rooms, sometimes they put a lot of weight in the actual video press lines, so you don't usually get the chance to get everybody at your table, which is unfortunate. So we didn't get everybody, but I feel like what we got, I was like really happy with who we got, and we only got them for a limited amount of time. Like, you know, if a press room goes really well, just to give you guys an idea of how things go down, if a press room is timed really, really well, then you're lucky if you get like 5 to 7 minutes with each person or each pair or each trio that sits at your table. And usually if that happens, you have about like, you know, maybe like 10, like 5 to 7 to 10 press people like at a table. Everybody kind of gets to ask a question, and then everybody walks away happy because you kind of get your own little exclusive. But in the case of the 100, they started cutting the interviews down to 2 to 3 minutes maximum at every table. And when that happens, people start panicking and moving over. So it gets really, really crazy, basically. But I knew that I was holding it down for Selena and the rest of the 100 fandom, so I had to make sure that I asked at least one question to every person. We got it done, and it was great. Richard Harmon was adorable, by the way, because even though we were pressed for time, he, like, insisted before he left the table on shaking everybody's hand that was there. And he just went around, aww, and he was like, hi, I'm Richard. Hi, I'm Richard. Hi, I'm Richard. It was very sweet. But yeah, the cast was really great. They're all clearly still very excited about the show, and we got some great questions in, as you might have seen over on Hypeable, where Selena worked very quickly. I'm pretty sure we were like the first outlet to have the video stuff up.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think we were.
Yeah. Showrunner, I think, like, I really liked the, I loved that he told our table that we were going to meet 3, like, really strong new characters. I thought that was really interesting, given, like, what's going to come next season. Because, you know, obviously you hope, well, you know that we're going to spend a lot of time with, like, our main core cast members. But the thing about the 100 is that, like, every season you get to look forward to meeting some new people that could be movers and shakers in this world. So I'm really excited to see who those people end up being, and where their allegiances lie, and how they, like, clash or come together with the likes of the characters that we're already obsessed with. So, yeah, it should be a fun season.
Yeah, very excited.
What did you like? Like, what was the most exciting thing that you uncovered as you... how many hours did you spend? Like, 7 hours watching footage?
I spent so much time. And you know what's funny is, because we were, yeah, like Pam was in the press room. She was filming on her phone and she was sending it to me via Facebook. And I was actually watching the 100 pilot at the time with my brother. And you were like, can you do this? I was like, oh, shit. Because I thought it was like later in the evening. So I like ran to my computer and I was trying to put watermarks on all the videos. Because hi, Twitter people, you like to take videos and post them to your own feeds, and that is a problem for us. So we, you know, I wanted to at least make sure that Hypeable's logo was in there. And, you know, I was uploading them and I was like transcribing them. Like, one was downloading, one was like exporting from my movie editing, one was uploading, and one was transcribing all at the same time in a row. And I was like, obviously, like, a lot of what they say is like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing a new aspect of my character after 5 years or whatever. But what Jason said about the 3 characters, I wasn't expecting him actually to reveal something. So that was cool. And that was nice of him. And 3 new characters, powerful new characters. We learned at the panel that, or at one of the other, I think, interviews that he did, that one of them is a woman, at least, if not all of them. And that is probably the thing I'm most excited about, to be honest, because I obviously love the characters that we get, and part of me is like, but can't we just have the ones we know and spend more time with them? But obviously there's no way, because we're getting this new faction of people And what he also revealed about these newcomers, he revealed this at the panel, and this feels huge. And I haven't seen a lot of people talk about this, which is pretty much like all I'm thinking about. And I hope that no one is like mind the 100 spoilers, because season 4 has been out for a while now and it's on Netflix and you should go watch it. But basically at the end of the season, a new group of people arrive from space. And Jason Rothenberg actually said at the main panel that they are from our time. So like from our time, like right now time. And they've been like frozen, because when we first learned about them last season, I was like, okay, well, because they were prisoners on a transport ship off to like mine a moon or something. And so I was thinking, well, obviously they're like descendants of those prisoners who found their way back now. Maybe they've connected with the Alitech on the Ark, something like that. But now, like, they've actually been frozen in cryosleep. So the people that are returning to Earth are the people that remember it as it looked in like 51 or whatever, which is crazy. Because, like, how is that? I was just thinking, like, the millions of repercussions. Like, first of all, the 100 has never been real. You know, it's never been reflecting our time right now. So it's going to be really jarring to have people who, as far as we know, are going to, like, dress like us and speak like us. And they're going to expect society to be like it was. They're going to be like, oh, I remember when the Washington Monument was there, or, oh, I really miss, like, taco shops or something. And it's just, that's going to be wild. And it's going to be weird that, like, they're going to be like, so where's your elected officials that make up your government? And they're going to be like, oh, we have a Juanita and we have a one crew now.
Yeah, the Juanita. It, like, take that so seriously, but weird. That's going to sound ridiculous. Like,
yes.
They're going to be like the one what?
Yeah. You add a language? What the hell? Like, it's just, I don't expect that it'll actually be silly, but in my head, I'm just like, how the hell is that going to, and what is that going to, how is that going to reflect on, because I feel like the 100 is very, very good at sort of taking this fantastical futuristic setting and sort of using it to say, oh, well, humans always make the same mistakes. We're always going to go back to killing each other and forming this us versus them society. And we repeat our parents' mistakes. Like, that's kind of like the running narrative of the 100. So what's it going to be like for our characters to be confronted with people who remember the world as it was? Because we've never had that. We've never really had any on-screen reflection of how their society kind of mirrors ours, but with characters that actually were from our society, that those conversations could actually become text, and I'm very interested in that. And obviously, like I'm expecting these three powerful new characters to all be women, and they'll be like the leaders of the Liches, and they'll be like super awesome and badass, and I'm like excited for them. And then what else? I mean, I feel like there was a bunch of news about Octavia going like even darker and like what she's going to have to do as a leader and stuff. And I'm a little bit less interested in that, because I feel like Octavia, I would like to see her maybe, I would be interested if they said, oh, well, she's not going to be as dark, you know, because I feel like she's been dark for so long that it's now coming to a point where I'm like, well, how much darker can she go? Mm. She's already been
the
Skyripa assassin.
I also did think it was interesting. I think Marie said this at the, she must have said it at the panel, because we didn't get her at our table. She said that Octavia has her own way of like of ruling and like disciplining people. Mm-hmm, and I, mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of is like, oh man, she's going to get herself in so much trouble, because in such a confined space, like there's no way. She can't just like run off. And I think that she's going to have like the most trouble next season. Trying to, because there's nowhere for her to run at this point, you know? In past seasons, we've seen her, like, lose her temper, and she's just, like, run off into the woods and been Octavia for a few days and then come back. But she can't do that now, so
she needs her freedom. Mm-hmm. She needs her, like, that's why she embraced like grounder culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, she wanted the violence. She wanted the catharsis of the life that they led. So the fact that, and she and the other grounders, like, they're going to go, I think Jason said, like, the first 5 years are probably going to be fine, because they know they're going to get out. But then after that, when they think they're trapped in there forever, things are going to, like, drastically change. Mm-hmm. And she may also chop off all her hair.
Yeah.
So maybe that we'll see that. I hope
they
so.
They really want her to go bald, which would be really funny.
I would love to see that. And
she'd probably look beautiful. Like,
I mean, she will. She'll be like this Furiosa type, like in the desert. Maybe she'll like lose an arm as well, and she'll be like, "Rah!"
It'll
be
so cool. That's the crossover I'll sign up for.
Yeah, and that's like, and that's what I love about Octavia is how visceral she is, you know. And I feel like there's so much talk in the fandom about how, oh well, she needs to atone for her sins and she needs to be held responsible. And I'm like, yeah, but she's not. I don't think that's her character. I don't think she's a moral anchor, and she was never meant to be one of the moral anchors. Like Bellamy and Clark, I feel like, and Kane and those people, they are much more sort of adherent to the audiences. Like, if you've done a bad thing, then you need to say you've done a bad thing, and you need to atone for this bad thing. Otherwise, we're going to be mad at you. But I feel like Octavia doesn't really fit into that, because she is so wild, and she is so instinctual, and she is so feeling rather than thinking in the way that she is as a person. So I always really like that about her, and I'm excited, I guess, to see what extremes they push her to, and if there's like a way to come back from that. Just looking down the list here, I have a list on Hyperbole of 19 things or 17 things we learned, 19 things we learned about the season. And I also just briefly wanted to touch on, because I think this is hilarious. So the people that are stuck in space, like I've long been saying, well, they have to have run into the Eligious crew at some point. There's no way that we have seven main characters alone for 6 years and they have done nothing up there except be bored. And everything that Jason is saying is pointing to the fact that actually, yes, they have been up there all that time to be bored, and they have been like dating each other and broken up with each other and just all these things. I think that's so funny. First of all, I think it's a huge misdirect. I think they've absolutely had some drama. Otherwise, what would be the point of sending them up there? But I also just, I like the idea that maybe this time jump will be spent exploring some of the relationship possibilities that fans have been sort of really interested in, and just sort of explore the boundaries of which characters would sort of find their way to each other and which would not. Obviously, I think Raven and Murphy is a big one, and I think that the actors kind of hinted that it might be going in that direction, and that could, again, be a huge misdirect. But I think I like Memori, you know, I like Murphy and Memori, but I also think that Raven and Murphy have a really interesting chemistry, and I think their relationship has gone through so much already that maybe 6 years in space they'll have like explored that a little bit. I think we can probably expect Bellamy and Echo to have gotten together at some point, because they have that sense of chemistry as well. And Harper and Monty have probably broken up too. Maybe they've gone back together in all that time, because 6 years is so long, you know, like it's such a long time. And if they really, what do you think about this? Like, do you first of all think that they have actually just been up there all that time? And do you think that we can expect some new constellations there?
I don't know. I mean, like, it's,
I joke that it's like a sense space orgy up there, well, but I mean, I don't like, actually think that. It's
possible. I mean, the funny thing about the 100 is that, like, that's, especially for a CW show, sex is not really at the forefront of everybody's
mind. No, not just, at like, all. That's why this sounds so weird.
Yeah, like, every once in a while, like, it happens.
It's not Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, but it's not, like, it's not a focal point of the series. But, yeah, I mean, like, if you're up there for 6 years, what else is there to do? Because you're not running from anybody. And I highly doubt that it's, like, the Mason-Dixon line up there where, like, half of them hate mm-hmm. each other, so they're on one side of the ship, and the other half are like, nope, I'm on this side,
that
and, like,
so funny,
you shall
though.
Not cross, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It also kind of, like, I don't know, it kind of makes me worried for, like, the characterization of some of the people that are up there, because in a lot of ways I feel like the reason the 100 is so interesting is because these people are put into such extreme emotional and physical situations that it really kind of brings you back to the root of, like, the human condition and, like, what your natural instinct is to do in situations like this. But if they're up there with, like, not a care in the world and, like, no conflict, then, like, what is your story?
And maybe that's, like, the boldest thing they can do, really,
maybe,
isn't it? Because they're breaking formula so much. And I think also just when it comes to Clark as well, down on the ground with Maddie, like, this is their chance to sort of reset her in a way and to make her deal with some of the huge things she's been through without it seeming disingenuous, you know? Because 6 years is such a lot. Like, it's a whole part of your life, you know? And I was like, how long, like, how are they going to manage that? But I think it's really smart, because I think that it's the only way that they can make people like Clark and Bellamy and all these people carry on and have a chance to digest some of those huge deaths and losses that they've experienced and have new energy to face new traumas, you know?
Yeah, and like, and obviously that was like the question at the forefront of everybody's mind at Comic-Con is just like, first of all, like, how has your character changed? Which, of course, they can't talk too much about. But also, like, from an acting perspective, how has that been challenging for you? And I think that, like, the main, like, universal response we've been getting from a lot of these, like, these actors that are playing key players on The 100 is like, yeah, like, you know, like, I have known my character as they are for 4 years. And now I'm like, I am getting to know a whole different person. So, yeah. It's like, it's almost like a whole new show, you know?
It is. It's like a reset. In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't feel, I don't feel sad about what we've lost. Like, not that I don't think they could have carried on in the way that they, the pace that they've gone, but I really enjoy that they are jumping ahead now because I feel like it just gives you a chance to see a different side of these characters that you'd never have gotten to if they just carried on in real time. So, it's super exciting. And I just wanted to say about the press room that I'm really surprised that they didn't put any of them together because I didn't even know. Was Tasha Tellis, who plays Echo, was she in the press
room? She was in the press room, but we didn't get
That's
her.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, because I didn't even know because I didn't see her in any of the videos. So it's like you didn't get Raven, you didn't get Octavia, you didn't get Echo.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw her as I was walking out, but it's possible that she either snuck in just to do pictures and didn't do any press because she was also supposed to be a surprise at the panel. And that's the thing is that, like, obviously, like, you know, when you're at Comic-Con, you're very tuned out of what's going on, but you still want fans to be surprised. And these days, fans are really tuned into what's happening. So they're waiting for pictures from the press room to pop up, which come up pretty fast. So, yeah, it was really weird because, like, the press room for The 100 happened first thing that morning. And then 2 hours later, we went to the panel. So it was kind of strange because in a lot of ways, I wished we had had the panel first because you would have been able to ask other questions that, you know, things that they might have brought up, you know, usually if you adjust your questions for what happens in the panel. But it was like a rare instance in which we got most of the scoops out of the press room before the panel took place. So, yeah. And with much more detail, which I thought was really, really nice because, usually like that doesn't happen. So it was kind of exciting in a way.
It was. Yeah. But they did the same last year and I was annoyed by that too. But I guess that's kind of like what they have to do. But I think that, you know, just having gone through, because at first, like right after, because I was like really sad, obviously, that I wasn't there. And I was like, I'm not going to watch anything. I'm just going to ignore the whole thing. But then I realized that there was so much that had come out of it. And I realized that no one else was sort of sitting down and picking through, like, of the 100 coverage people around the internet, picking through all the reveals. I was like, well, then I guess I have to do it. And it was actually really fun to see. Like, they clearly had a good time, and it's nice to see them so excited about the story and about where the characters are going to go. I think Bob Morley especially is just really pumped. Like, he's a big fan of his own show, which I appreciate.
He was also really excited to be back because I think you mentioned before I left that he wasn't at Comic-Con last year.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, I'm so excited to be here. He was just like really excited with his, like, carrying his little fan around because it was like so darn hot out there in San Diego. It was just like so funny. His little like paper fan.
Yeah, I saw that. So, I mean, such a really great, and the last thing that I just wanted to touch on, and then I guess we'll move on if we have to. God, if this isn't 100 special, was just the little video that they released, the little sizzle reel that was basically like a recap of the first four seasons leading into season 5. Yeah, what did you think?
I thought that was a really cute way to do it because, like, you know, Maddie is like retelling the story. And it kind of, like, it was, like, super nostalgic. It's something that you don't really expect from a show that's only been around for 4 seasons. But as we've discussed before, it's, like, The 100 packs so much story into 13 episodes. It's actually kind of amazing how much they've been able to cover in 4 short years. Or, yeah, we're on 4 years, right? Going on 5 years or 3 years. Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I thought, and I also kind of thought it was really nice because, like, obviously we know that they, like, our group has been separated. So Clark's been on the ground all this time, and it's kind of unexpected that she would be that sentimental about everything that's happened and like all of these people in her life, because for so long she kind of just like, she didn't like shut out all emotion, but I think that she really learned how to separate. But I thought it was really sweet that she like spends her time telling Maddie about like the history that came before what they have now.
Yes.
So yeah. It's very unlike Clark to be like that mothering.
First of all, yeah. And then again, that is kind of who she's always been. Like, yeah. She's always, from the first season, I think the actress made a point to mention Charlotte, the little girl that Bellamy and Clark and Octavia, or Finn, kind of tried to protect after she killed Wells. And I think that Clark has always been kind of like the one who felt like she's had to take care of everyone. Like, she's kind of been like the mother to everyone in a way. Like, she's felt the responsibility of it. And that's, I think that's what's kept her going, is that she's endured so much personal loss. She's lost people that she, I always feel like it's so interesting how the show is basically taking everyone away from Clark that might actually help her in some way, and that she derives any kind of comfort from. Like, there was Wells, and there was Finn, and there was Lexa, and there was Anya, who also was like an ally to Clark. So it's like everyone who could have made Clark's life easier is gone, right? So she's been alone, and she's had people around her, but I think all the loss that she's endured has just kind of isolated her and made her sort of go into the survival mode of like, I have to keep looking forward. I have to keep looking forward. I have to save everyone, because if I don't, then they will die. You know, when she almost became the commander in season 4, which was like a huge, like, scary moment, because that's obviously not, that wasn't like, yay, Clark commander. That was like, oh no, she's taking over these people's culture. But it was her like last ditch effort going like, if I don't save them, then no one will, and it has to be me. And so I think what is so, again, with Clark in this time jump and isolating her with this one person, that like narrowing down her world, this one person that she has to, she doesn't only have to protect her, she also has to personally connect with her. And she is in a space where she can stop and remember the people that she's lost, and she can personalize her experience instead of always having to lock up her own emotions to focus on the big picture. And this is like the smallest of pictures that she now has to focus on. And I think it sort of speaks back to the version of Clark that we saw in the arc, who was like drawing and who was dreaming of the ground, and who was this more poetic, artistic, soulful person than what she had to become to survive. And then you see the way that she's been telling the story to Maddie is like a fairy tale with good people and bad people and heroes and monsters. And that's so interesting, because that's not what the show is. But that's what Clark has chosen to frame it as. She's like constructing a mythology of this of the story, mm-hmm. that we've seen play out in like gritty detail. And I love that. I love that way of framing it, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was really sweet. Uncharacteristically sweet for the 100, but in a nice way. It was really nice. And it got a really good fan reaction. So
yeah, except for the people that were really mad, because of course you can't call the grounders monsters, even though they called everybody monsters.
5,000 people in Ball 20 were very pleased. Yes. There were no boos.
Well, I was also very pleased. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. And again, yeah, way to sort of reframe the story, mm-hmm. and be like, yeah, we've told you the story where there are no good guys. Now here's a version of the story where there are heroes and villains. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do with that? You know, it's like, what?
That's so true. It. Yeah.
I love the show. I'm so excited. It comes back, I think, early February, so we have a while to wait yet.
Oh
but...
my gosh. Well, it's perfect time for all of you that want to catch up now that we've spoiled everything.
Yeah.
But it's still worth a watch. It's still worth a watch.
Really is.
Mm-hmm. Man, what are we on now? Is it my turn?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Well, my voice for a little bit.
Oh, man. These are apples and oranges, you guys. This next story concerns the one and only Stephenie Meyer, who, of course, most of us know from the Twilight series. She has actually teamed up with Starz, and she will be executive producing a brand new sci-fi series for the network. They're going to bring a tale called The Rook to life, and it actually kind of sounds pretty interesting. So according to Hollywood Reporter, The Rook focuses on a young woman who awakens in a London park. The girl has no memories and no idea why she's surrounded by latex-gloved dead bodies, and then after that, she is forced on the run and sucked into the realm of a supernatural secret service and pursued by Arachne forces. So it definitely sounds like this is going to be a pretty intense series, and the show has actually been ordered straight to series, so Starz is definitely putting a lot of weight on this. Stephenie Meyer will be executive producing the upcoming drama, and Stephen Garrett will serve as the showrunner. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes, and there's no real, I don't think that there's a release date yet, but I'm sure that it's going to be highly talked about and buzzed about as it goes into production, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with this, but it's definitely happening, and should make for a good Starz series. Starz, you know, has kind of been shifting over to that fantasy sci-fi stuff, so it kind of goes really well with what they've got going on over there.
Sure, but is it mermaids?
I'm still waiting for Midnight Sun, so you
always
know.
Always waiting.
I feel this. No time-traveling mermaids here.
God. Seriously, Stephenie, what do we have to do? It sounds good. I feel like there's so much hate towards Stephenie Meyer, but she's a really good storyteller, and I, like, absolutely adore, I've said before, The Host. It's one of, like, might be one of my favorite books. Like, I really love that book. So I'm excited to see her sort of return. She hasn't done anything in a while since the gender-bent Twilight.
Well, she also had that movie, the book The Chemist, was it? The Alchemist?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I didn't read that one.
Yeah, I haven't, I didn't even pick that up yet. I always forget about it, but I always see it at the bookstore. So, but if you have read it, let us know what you thought. I'm sure that we still have some people that are keeping up with her releases. Not that she releases, quite often, but, you know, we'd love to hear what you think if you have picked that up. So aside from Stephenie Meyer, we also have another blast from the past to report this week. Earlier this week, we learned that MTV is officially bringing back Total Request Live. Now, if you guys, like, grew up...
I have no idea what this is.
Oh, man. This was, like, a staple in my after-school, like, TV lineup. So Total Request Live was... it's Carson Daly's claim to fame. And basically, they would count down the top 10 music videos of the week. So every week, you would get, like, the top 10. And then, like, you know, like, the biggest thing would be to see who was, like, at number one and how long they could stay at number one. It was always, like, back in the early O's, it was always, like, NSYNC versus Backstreet Boys or NSYNC Britney Spears. And it was, yeah, this was my jam, like, very early on into the music stuff, you know. And they were also known for, like, the fans used to wait outside the TRL studios because they'd have special guests come in and do interviews and stuff like that. The show ran for a pretty long time, and it looks like MTV is looking to, you know, hit a home run with the nostalgia, because we're really into the nostalgia these days. Although it'd be interesting to see if this actually takes, because, you know, like, MTV has really taken the music out of music television. And they've been focused more on either reality television or scripted dramas, and that's fine. But this is kind of like a new push into potentially bringing back more of the music into their programming. And TRL was like a staple for that back in the day when the channel was much more about bringing you music and even like news and stuff like that. So yeah, we'll see what happens. There's no... no word yet on who will be hosting TRL, being the next Carson Daly, but hey, you know, MTV, I'm available if you need.
Yes.
I feel like I'd be good with this. For you. Yeah.
But then you're like, I don't have time for hype anymore.
I would still do hype on this. I'd bring like hype into the TRL.
Oh, good. I'm good. Then it's okay. Yeah. Then I approve. This is good. I'm happy for you. I still have no connection.
I don't know
to this,
if but... I'm happy for myself. That's the thing, because this is just so weird. It's like out of nowhere, and for the sake of, like, you know, like, putting more of a spotlight on music, because there really is, like, even VH1 doesn't do music anymore. I remember growing up, the way that I would discover bands, like, back before the internet was more of a treasure trove with which to discover new music, like, I would, like, get ready and like turn on the VH1 countdown, because it would be like a little bit edgier than what MTV had going on, which was more mainstream. But there really aren't any like music networks anymore. So in that sense, it is kind of exciting that a show like Total Request Live could potentially do well because it doesn't like stuff like that doesn't exist anymore on TV. And I think there's something to be said for showcasing what like the target demographic that consumes popular music is like obsessing over in a way other than like what we see on the internet. Like obviously like anybody can look up charts. Like Spotify has like all of the charts, or you can go straight to like Billboard and they have like charts from everything from what's trending on Twitter to like what's actually like trending on the radio. But it's just like a different way to kind of keep up with what's hip. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and for anybody that's interested, it's actually set to make its grand return on October 2nd on MTV. So, mark awesome. Your calendars.
Okay, so moving on to TV show of the week, and I don't know if you have anything this week, but I just wanted to briefly talk about, I'm going to do a Patreon video for our Patreon supporters on the video tier. So to talk about this more in depth, but I just wanted to briefly mention that I have been watching The Handmaid's Tale. I kind of binged it over this last weekend, kind of sporadic, like randomly. I was meant to catch up on Wynonna Earp, which I did not, but I did watch The Handmaid's Tale. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I was sort of, the reason I haven't watched it before now is because I kind of knew that it was going to be hard to watch. And I think I was kind of waiting for, I was waiting to like be in the right mind space. And then I kind of occurred to me that that mind space might never come. So I might as well just kind of like rip the Band-Aid off and watch it. And have you watched it?
I have. I talked about it a few months back, but I haven't finished the first season. I think I watched up to like episode 6 or 7, but it's just, I've never read the book, but oh my gosh, the series is like, it's horrifying, but that's what it's supposed to be, you know?
Yes.
And it was one of those things where I sat down to watch the first episode and I was so horrified by what I saw, but I couldn't stop watching. And I watched like 4 episodes in a night, and then I came back and watched more the next day. It's so well done and so frightening. And like, because it, you know, you think it's like, oh, like this is just an exaggeration, but it's not far off. The idea of like stripping away rights is not far off to like what our reality is. So that makes it all the more intense.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And watching it sort of as well, knowing what actually happened in real life in Iran, which was obviously in Iran, which was obviously like something, not this, but something similar to this, also makes it like extremely harrowing, because it's like, it's not actual fiction. It's actually something that could happen. But I will say, I've talked to some people who said, because I was like, this is really affecting me, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yeah, you know, they really felt like they needed to space it out and give themselves more time to process. And I will definitely recommend that if that's what you feel like you need to do. But for me, it actually really helped to watch it all the way through. So I will really, really, I would really recommend that you watch it all. And if you haven't started watching it yet, now that all 10 episodes are available, they should be. The last one just aired in the UK, so it should be on HBO around the world now, or wherever Hulu. You're watching it. Hulu.
Yeah.
It's on Hulu. No, it's on HBO over here.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So yeah, they're just distributing it on HBO Nordic. Oh, so I just got that for Game of Thrones, so then I got to watch it. what I think is interesting, or is worth it, is that the first episodes especially will just make you really, really hopeless, because it's all terrible and you see how it became terrible. But I think as we near the end, it's not like it's all good or fixed or anything by the end, and the last couple of episodes are very harrowing and will make you really angry. But there is a streak of hope in them that wasn't necessarily there in the early episodes. I think they do a really good job of peppering in little bits of victory, even in that mess. And you watch it for those. They become like a lifeline for you as you watch it. And I knew, like, from the beginning, I was like, I know I have to watch all 10 episodes when they've started. Or after I watched the first one, because then I could have, like, I had a grace period, right? So as I was, like, watching along, I was like, I have to make it through. Like, there came a point when it felt like you were going down the hill rather than up the hill, if that makes sense. Like, I think around episode 7, actually, like, was when I was like, oh, wow, I actually feel like, there's a trace of empowerment here. How did that happen? And I think as you go along, like, you really begin to feel like humanity will win out in a way. Like, that's that undercurrent message that I really like. So I would highly recommend that you finish it. And I would also just say to anyone who's sort of worried about picking this up is that it's definitely rewarding to watch it all the way through. And I have actually read the book, so I was sort of a little bit, but they could have done all kinds of changes to the story here, and they have done some changes, so I still wasn't sure what to expect. But
is it fairly true? So impressed. Would you say it's fairly?
It's fairly. Yeah, I would say so. I think that there is they flesh out, because it's all from Alfred's point of view, and it's all her telling the story. And I think they definitely, obviously, in the series, they've given flashbacks to some of the other characters as well, and they let you into the minds of some of the people, and they show you what's happening when Alfred is not there. And I think that really helps. I think that's a world that you want to explore, and you want to see how different people, because obviously it's interesting to see how someone like Serena Joy, who is the woman who I thought was played by Rosamund Pike, but apparently not. It's Yvonne Strahovski, I believe is her name. But so you're like, how is she? Like, why is she put up with this? And you learn some things about her. You're like, holy crap. And like, you have to sort of contend with all the different minds of the people that are, quote unquote, allowing this to happen, and why, and how, and oh my God, it's very interesting. And I will actually say, like, I think the book is obviously better, because it's the book that started it all, and it's the book that let you into this world. But I think the TV show sort of gives you a more rounded view of everything. And I also think, because there's going to be season 2, so you don't really know where the story is going to go, but I think that watching it, as opposed to reading about it from a slightly unreliable narrator, is going to be a more satisfying experience. Because you are kind of left at the end of the book not really knowing what's, like, not to be too spoilery, but like, you're not totally sure what's happened. So, and I think there's things you don't know. And I think that when you watch it on the screen, there's things that you're going to have to know. And I think that's going to help. And I think I came out of the series feeling inspired, not depressed. And I think that's saying something. Anyway, I will do a video on that while I talk a little bit more about it. And my complete and overwhelming, all-consuming crush on the guy who plays her husband. Because I'm like, oh my God.
her real husband.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was going to say that's...
Not Joseph Fiennes.
Oh, God. I was going to say, wow, that's pretty...
No.
Wow, Selena.
No. He's not her husband. Oh, my God. Anyway. Ugh, gross. Like, shaking. Like, gross. Anyway. Yeah. So tell us in the comments how you guys have been watching The Handmaid's Tale and if you've enjoyed it. And moving on now to listener feedback. Do you want to get the patron stuff?
Sure. It's been a while since we checked in with our patrons, so we decided to ask them how they've been hyping, because you guys hear how we've been hyping every week, but it's always fun to check in and see what they've been enjoying. And a lot of times we get inspired and pick up some of the things that you guys have been loving. So the first comment here comes from Emmy Foss, who says, I've been rereading Harry Potter. I read History Is All You Left Me by Adam Silvera and cried my eyes out. Also read The Upside of Unrequited and smiled the whole way through. Currently I'm watching Battlestar Galactica and the final and superb season of Orphan Black.
Hmm. Interesting.
Laura Morrow says, well, like Emmy, I am also rereading Harry Potter. I'm also watching Buffy season 6 and How I Met Your Mother season 6, which I am loving so far. I'm also reading an adorable middle grade series called The School for Good and The Evil Witch. So far, it's very cute. Alex Claro says, I just finished binging Smallville. I'm in a love-hate relationship with the last episode. I love and hate that it is so cheesy, but saying that, I know it couldn't have ended better. I felt like it completely embodied the comic book feels at the end. I know I'm a few years late to the Tom Welling party, but damn. Okay, side note. So when I was at Comic-Con, I was doing, what press room was I in? I was in the press room for Riverdale, and I walked out, and I thought, I was like, is that Tom Welling? I was like, why would Tom Welling be at Comic-Con? Like, no. And so I, like, left. It turns out he was there because he just got cast in Lucifer season 3.
Oh, my God.
And he was the surprise guest at the panel. Can confirm, he still looks great, Alex. So, if you're looking for more Tom Welling in your life, maybe you should pick up Lucifer, which I actually really enjoy a lot as a series. Okay, Alex continues, I also finished off the last season of Bones. It says it came out on Hulu. I was really hoping to get more feels from the ending, but it didn't do much for me. I like that it left it very open for continuation if needed, but I'm not itching to know what happens next. I feel the show ran its course a few years ago, and it just kept prolonging the end.
Thank you so much to everyone for your comments on Patreon. That's very exciting. I wish you watched Smallville sometime. Anyway, in the future at some point, we have our commitment now. And we're going to move on to comments now. We have one from hyperbole.com, which is hypable.com, from Melissa Miller, who says, anyone seen the incredible Jessica James on Netflix this week? Jessica Williams, who plays the lead, was my favorite correspondent on The Daily Show for a long time. So when I saw this movie come up on Netflix, I had to go check it out. And I was not disappointed. It was really heartwarming and funny, with all the genuine and strong female lead vibes you could ask for. Though I have to say, it really felt like it ought to be a TV show, not a one-off movie. I want more. P.S. Jessica's story about J.K. Rowling on Stephen Colbert last week was the best. Yes. I watched that. Have you seen this movie? I want to see this movie.
I haven't. It's on my list. Maybe this weekend.
And do you want to keep going? We have two comments.
Sure, yeah. Wow. I'll take this one from Betty, who says, I have a book recommendation for you. If you like The Upside of Unrequited, you have to read Queens of Geek by Jen Wild. It's set at a convention and all about fandom. It's diverse, it's body positive, and has the most realistic portrayal of anxiety I've ever read. It's super cute and a quick read, and I really recommend it. Also, I want to say, I'll really miss you, Marima. Good luck with whatever you'll be doing next.
That's really nice. Sweet. And then we have a couple of tweets, too. We have one from Abby Lee who says, yes, she says, are you waiting for Selena for a discussion of the 100 stuff at Comic-Con? Yes, we just did that. She also said, we will miss you, Marima. I've never seen it, but another witches show is Witches of East End with Jenna Dew and Tatum.
Oh, yeah. So, Selena, maybe you can help out. I want to say it was Laura maybe that asked us for recommendations about witches, but not Charmed, because like she already knew that. And Merriman and I couldn't come up with too many, but like, do you know any shows about witches or books about witches or movies about witches that she might be able to sink her teeth into?
I mean, there's a little show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer that has a great bunch of witches on there.
That's why she asked for the recommendation.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's funny.
She said that she's gone to, like, the Buffy companion novels and...
Cool. I love those. I can give you some recs on those. I mean, look, The Secret Circle was really good. Like, I'll just say that. I know there was only a season and it ended open-endedly, but I really enjoyed The Secret Circle. So I, like, actually highly recommend that one. And that's funny that like it's hard to think of because you think that it's so prevalent, but maybe that's just because of Harry Potter.
I recommended The Craft from the 90s because I just think it's like a cult classic. And also The Magicians, even though that's more like wizardy stuff, but I did enjoy the first season of that on Sci-Fi.
As for books, though, I think that there are a couple of different routes that you can take. If you want something funny, and this is like more of a general recommendation, and I'm like, it seems dumb because it's like saying you should read Lord of the Rings, but it's the Discworld novels by Terry Pratchett are some of my all-time favorite novels, and he has a lot, and they're all set in this like really bizarre, weird, hilarious world of the Discworld, but there's one thread of novels that follows witches. And you don't have to, if you're interested, I can write more about this on Twitter to you, but you don't have to read them all, because they're like kind of anthologies within the same world. So there's like one thread of books that follows this group of really hilarious witches, and there's one girl who is like, she's kind of, it's kind of like a funny, like, what's it called, empowering tale, because she like is accepted to the wizard school, but she's a girl and she's like not really supposed to be there, but she goes there anyway. And it's the way he writes, I really enjoy it, and it might not be for everyone, but I find it absolutely hilarious. So there's those. And then if you are okay with like young adult stuff, then Tamora Pierce obviously is another one of my favorite authors, and she's done some absolutely incredible book series that maybe not necessarily about witches, but they are definitely magic related. There is the one that my favorite is The Song of the Lioness, which is actually about a girl who is like a knight, you know, but she has a brother who is a magician. And then the one that you might be more interested in is there's actually a couple of them with magic, but the one that I like the best is the one called Wild Magic, which is a girl who can, she has like magical powers that she can speak to animals, and she's, it's this medieval setting, and it's really, really good, and it's really enjoyable, and it's obviously, it is for a young adult audience, but that doesn't mean that we can't enjoy it. And so yeah, Tamora Pierce's Wild Magic series would be another one. And now that I mention it, like, I have read a lot of books about witches, and it's hard for me to recall too many of them right now, but I will we should try to do more of those, because I think there will be a lot. And of course, the Raven Cycle, there's magic in that, right?
Yeah, it's more like psychic magic. That's the thing, because like there's a lot of like magic books, and but there's not, or like power books, right? But there, I can't think of anything that's like specifically witches. But if you're interested in just like girls with like supernatural abilities and stuff, or even like guys with supernatural abilities, write back and let us know, because I could definitely give you some of those, and I'm sure Selena can too.
Witches of East End might actually be a pretty good place to start then, because that is actually legitimately about witches. Yeah. Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Marimov brought that up. Actually, like, those movies are so silly, but if you wanted to like watch the movies, like the original, and then and then, like, the one with Melissa Joan Hart, which kind of spawned the TV show, that would be kind of fun. Also, Teen Witch is a classic, if you've never seen that.
Yep. So, yeah. Lots of witches. Mm-hmm. All right. So, and also, we just had a brief little shout out to Laura Morrow for plugging Hype to John Green, which was very nice of you. And so, yeah, we hope he listens. Hi, John. Write about witches. Do you want to get the email?
Sure. This one's from Amanda, who says, "Hey guys, first, I love, love, loved your podcast. I was listening to your Token Females episode and wanted to comment on the Netflix movie To the Bone." Oh, this must have been when you reviewed it. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I love it. "I had an active eating disorder from ages 15 to 17, but struggled with it for a long time before being hospitalized, and still struggle from time to time. This movie for me was spot on. Since it's been 15 years since I was hospitalized, it wasn't too hard to watch, but I still got emotional in certain parts. It was cathartic to watch a story that I could relate to so closely. Even the house where she received treatment was similar to where I stayed for 6 months. I just wanted to give my thoughts, as I am recovered as much as one can be. Anorexic, again, thanks, and I always enjoy your episodes, and they have helped me through some tough times. Keep up the great work, Amanda." I love this. Thank you, Amanda, for writing in and sharing your story, because I know that sometimes it's hard to talk about that. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. If anyone wants to write in and comment on what we talked about this week, give us your great Jack Thorne defense. I know someone out there has one, so let's hear it. Or anything else, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr @hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And on Instagram @hypeablehype, and on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com. Leave a comment on episode 155, and we will find you and read you next week. And did I say email yet? If otherwise, that's hype@hypeable.com. I feel like that can't be said enough, so whatever, that's fine. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, or if you are already a patron and you want to go and see the bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/hypepodcast. And this week's bonus discussion will be all about Game of Thrones. Thank you so much for listening. We cannot wait to get into all the fun stuff we have planned. Merlin, basically, I can't wait to start watching Merlin.
You know what? I'm so excited. Me too, because I need something happy in my life. I feel like Merlin brings me joy. So this is great.
I'm so excited. Do you know how to walk on your knees?
Oh my God. I'm so excited. Stop.
Yes. So we're excited. We hope you are too. And thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next week for episode 156. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
The dragon.
And then we'll get to hear when he changes from a young boy to a young man.
Yes, the big moment.
In the titles, like, yes. All of a sudden we get to season whatever, and they're like, rest on the shoulders of a young man.
We were shook, yeah.
We were so shook.
Oh, it's going to be great. I'm excited.
It's going to be so good.